Welcome to Framework of Field.
Framework is a show consecrated to field recording and its use in composition. Field recording, phonography, the art of sound hunting. Open your ears and listen. Framework Afield is a series of special editions curated and produced by guest artists from around the world. A new edition airs every second week, alternating with our usual Framework broadcasts. For more information, see our website at www.frameworkradio.net. This week's Framework Afield is the second in a two-part series produced by Valeria Merlini and Felicity Ford. It features mixes and recordings made during the Documenting Sound workshop held at the Audiograft Festival. The Audiograft Festival 2012 was organized by the Sonic Art Research Unit at Oxford Brookes University in the UK. For more information, see www.sound-diaries.com.
This microphone, we've got three of these. It's an Audio-Technica BP4029. It's a stereo shotgun microphone, and it sounds beautiful. It's really crystal clear, amazing, high fidelity sound, but it's very, very sensitive to handling noise. And all like cardioid shotgun condenser mics are. So if you're using any shotguns, you need to have a pistol grip like this, so that the microphone is suspended in here. Like literally you go and you point the microphone at the sound and you'll get
like
pretty much just, it is like a torch. That's a brilliant way of kind of describing it.
But do you see how now if I'm standing here, I'm completely in the beam.
Yeah.
So you can hear really precisely.
Whereas
no.
It's very directional.
A completely other kind of microphone is an omnidirectional microphone, which tend to be quite small, and their pickup pattern is, as the name suggests, 360 degrees. And they're much less sensitive to handling noise, but they're not very good. Like if you want to get somebody speaking in a crowded room, you wouldn't use this, because you just get, it
the
picks up everything.
Yeah, yeah, the whole atmosphere is like you are in a balloon.
Yeah.
Get that kind of feeling.
Yeah. And then the other kinds of microphones that we've got that we should talk about a little bit is the contact microphones.
All right.
Do you think we should go through those? Because that's another way of capturing sounds again. And as we're kind of moving around in this room, the sound waves are travelling through everything, including this table and the wall. And contact microphones will pick up sound waves travelling through surfaces, textures, the railings outside a building, the glass door outside a building, the sound in the floorboards inside a concert, the sound in the wall at a concert.
Textures, yes.
But if you hang it in space, it doesn't pick anything up. It only picks up. The BluTac is kind of crucial to the success of that, really, isn't
it? And then it's these other kind of microphones. They're called biaural microphones. And it means that they try to reproduce, in a way, your listening experience. So you have your right and left to perception, but it's really stereophonic. So if you have, for example, a car passing by you in front of you from left to right, you got it really the same sound experience. The thing is that it's very nice to record with this. It's kind of sensible microphone. But it's perfect, for example, when you listen after, okay, through speakers, but for headphones is better. So when you have, just for the final result of your work, because then you really can perceive the sound coming from up to down, really the sound, so how he behaves and moves around in the space around you while you record.
There we go. Manfred Werder, Ben Iron, Patrick Farmer. New Works, Old Fire Station. Preview, February 28th, 5:30 to 7:30. So that's obviously tonight.
Oh, cool.
So we could try some stuff out there for sure, couldn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you ready?
You guys are some compact and mobile. Just ready to go.
Well, do you need a hand? Because you've got two shotgun mics to...
I might just get up there and get them out there.
Okay.
You think?
How do you like?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, it's very different from coming through the shop with all the gifts and coming through the back with, the other way into the gallery space from the reception of the performance space. So you walk through from the road into a sort of white, clear reception, and then you walk into the gallery bit where it's very white. It feels very different up here and this buzzy little shop from down into the gallery space, which is very clear and quiet, and things are very sparse, and you've got to, it's a very concentrating space.
Even for the sparsity of these three pieces, it's still quite loud, and because it highlights the space and the absence of the space, so it becomes much more pointed.
I'm just trying to think how do we can set up the space of the Richard Hamilton building with some of these recordings, like this, because the student performance, this is stuff that happens in Brooks all the time. It's kind of, so maybe if we have a small section of like the sound world of the Richard Hamilton building.
Let me see, I think what I found was a very typical sound which came back all the time was this door. It's very like this piggy sound in a way, which it was very you could hear it from far because it had this typical frequency, I don't know, but that's what something, it's like which was always there, which really belongs to the place somehow, which I kind of liked.
There's that nice recording
of the you plucking the piano strings, and you have a nice recording of the installation of the guitar piece upstairs.
I mean, I think at the launch, I don't know what you think, but I think it'd be quite nice to have a sense of the chronology of the launch and the transition between the spaces in the Richard Hamilton building, and then get a sense of that, you know, the whole crowd following Lee as he did the guitar drag down, and then the cartridge music, which was so different,
maybe kind
of sense of what it was. Even quite briefly, to be able to kind of create a sense of that.
So we need chronology. The concerts, so there's the sewing machine performance. And then this beautiful recording that you have of the guitar drag. Then we've got the cartridge music.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming for the Wednesday night of the Audiograph Festival. This is a performance of John Cage's Cartridge Music, written in 1960, we think. Tonight to be performed by Patrick Farmer, Alfredo Costa Montero, Lee Patterson, Rob Kurgenven, Daniel Jones, Ferran Fages, and Stephen Cornford. The performance will last about 37 minutes. About exactly 37 minutes.
A lot of the sound events of the piece were really beautiful and amazing, but I was a bit frustrated because I wanted to see what people were using to make the sounds, and I could really see very, very little.
That's going to be the same for our radio listeners, that they will hear the sounds, but they won't know what the source of the sounds was.
That is so a new piece that you need to have a visual.
There was just a few moments where, like, for a lot of the time I just felt like I was standing outside and I could hear kind of sound art sounds happening, and then I could hear sounds of the city happening, and then there were some moments where those two worlds got quite blurred, and those for me, so that was my listening experience, was there was definitely one moment where there was a kind of like a bass tone coming out of the concert, and I was listening to this bass tone, and then I heard a kind of, someone was pushing a trolley down the car park, and it was just some sort of site maintenance work at Brooks, and it was a really low rumbling sound, and I became really confused then, where is this low sound coming from? Is it the art sound from the building, or is it the site maintenance? And they kind of got mixed up. And how do you feel about the interaction between the sounds that are already here and your work?
Well, I had some really nice comments on the work, which were things like that you start listening to the work, but then your attention is drawn to things like the birds, which you would otherwise not pay attention to. And it made me realise that, in a sense, it activates the space sonically as well, because it does draw your attention to other sounds in the environment. The sounds are very, very high frequency, and it doesn't really clash with the other sounds in the environment. So it's there, but it doesn't have to be loud to be noticeable, because it's kind of above everything else in frequency. And so I'm very happy for the sounds to coexist. That was always the idea, actually. A work isn't necessarily finished by the artist, it's finished by the listener, by the viewer, and as such, it doesn't have one complete form. It has a kind of cloud of complete forms. I really like that idea that, you know, the piece has almost like multiple truths, depending on who's listening to it, who's looking at it.
I think we should go for a walk.
Sounds good.
Which way should we go? What end should we go from?
Should we start from...
Let's start from there.
Let's start from there.
I'm recording now.
I'm recording.
Can you repeat it, please?
It partly came from a desire to interact with to engage with the environment. And it partly came from dissatisfaction with sound work, where you always had to change batteries or run mains cable or power cable. And I just thought it'd be so nice if you had things, I was thinking originally by the side of the path, that were making sound and reacting to the sun, and that they would be solar powered. And that idea kind of grew into the idea of hanging things in trees. I had these brass gramophone horns made, so I have 10 of them, and in the piece where I've hung it here, I've used 7, just because of the spacing of the trees. It's just a very simple little oscillator circuit, but it's solar powered, and so the frequency of the sound changes according to the amount of sunlight that's falling on the solar panel, and also there's a light reactive part of the circuit as well. So there's quite complicated set of elements that can affect the way it sounds. And so you find that during the day, if it's sunny and cloudy, or if the amount of sunlight changes, then they all sound quite different. And also I use slightly random components in them as well, so each one, even under the same light, would actually sound slightly different.
Just as we've been standing here, it was a bit clouded over, and then the cloud moved out of the way and the pitch went up.
Yep.
And that's to do with how the circuitry is reading the light, and how that affects this.
The light affects the power, and it affects the frequency of the oscillator.
It's like hearing sunlight.
You can put it on your elbow.
You can put it into my ear.
I'll take your thing.
Thank you.
And you put your finger there. Put your finger in your ear. Or inside in you.
It's amazing.
It's going through your bones. Going through you.
The speed of sound through rock salt is 4,780 metres per second. Through peanut oil is 1,460 metres per second. Through linseed oil, 1,770 metres per second. Through turpentine, 1,280 metres per second. And through petroleum, is 1,290 metres per second. The speed of sound through Bakelite is 2,519 metres per second. The speed of sound through Nylon is 2,620 metres per second.
So can you describe what's in the cases?
Okay, well, I've got a sort of bog standard camera case, and inside is a battery with an amp, so that an MP3 player is playing, and the amp is boosting the sound for the MP3 player and playing it through a transducer. So that's the little speaker. But instead of being an ordinary speaker or earphones where you stick it in your ears, it's a contact speaker where a flat surface, you press it on a surface or a material.
The speed of sound through silver and gold is 3,600 metres per second and 3,240 metres per second, respectively. Although glass, steel and aluminium are between 6,000 and 7,000.
So did she put the speaker on your head?
So I was holding the speaker on the side of my skull,
yeah,
on the right side. So I could hear it on the right side, but then I could also hear the same recording but with a slightly different quality on the left side.
Even though there was no speaker there?
But there's no speaker there. And it was obviously just coming around my skull.
Travel through your skull, yeah.
But it sounded as though it was coming from a sound source that was kind of maybe about a meter away from me. So it was really weird. It was like this kind of phantom, odd sound, you know, because it was kind of, yeah, like hearing a sound that didn't seem to have a sound source somewhere.
Mm, so ghost sound. This is an old town.
Yeah, I can hear it very gently. I guess the point is that that's touching your bone straight away and then resonating through your whole hand, whereas it's not like... What if you put your hands on...
Serious?
Can you feel it?
No. Oh yeah.
Looks like you're thinking really hard.
Hey! Oh, sorry! Sorry, we have to go. That was a really good
one. Something like revealing sound. The sound is everywhere. That in fact, within you, you probably have heard or experienced vibration through your everyday environment and yourself in all sorts of different ways. And it just connects you to that way of being with how you are indoors or what the floor you're standing on, the room you're in, that your experiences of hearing sounds through walls or through yourself, you know, when you put your head on the pillow, how you're hearing things within you, it just reveals how sound is there and different. It gives you a different perspective, if you like.
Do you have a sound?
A sound, just one?
Yeah, from yesterday.
Oh, yes. I have a nice sound of an unexpected plane passing by on the street. And in a way, my focus were more bike sounds, footstep sounds. But that sound covered everything in a way and melted. And I really like it because it was not that dominant that I couldn't get the other environmental sound, but I really like it because it was kind of fading in and fading out in a very nice way in the city, and it was not too arrogant to me.
first heard this jet come over, was, I think I was in between recording, and it just made a huge kind of really massive wash of sound over everything, and that sound took over my whole like sensory environment, and then it faded, and it took about a minute and a half for it to go away completely. But as that kind of like gravelly like faded away, the really really light like thin sounds of bikes kind of going like came back in to, I could start to hear them again. So after this wash, whenever I got this, these really light little things whizzing by, it was a really nice transition. Because they're very quiet, obviously, and the plane was like super loud.
For me, it was about the same situation, but it was after the plane. It was when we were standing on the corner in front of the concert room where we would go to see the concert. And also, like, there was this moment, everything sounded so friendly somehow. That all the combinations of all the sounds, like you had like this birds and like talking people, like walking through this tiny street, because you really could hear they were like so small, all this. Streets because of the like acoustics between the walls, and you know everything like the walls of the people, the birds, like the bikes, everything was so easy going somehow, and I really like this short moment where everything so nicely fit together as like a beautiful place to be. So yeah, that was I think something I remembered from yesterday. Combination of friendly sounds.
The sound that is in my head from yesterday is I really enjoyed the timing of during the performance by the Albion players, where they were pulling a brick really slowly across the floor of the Holywell building. And because it's really long wooden floorboards and just a brick with string around it, it was these two surfaces of this clay brick and this wooden floor, and it was just very slightly grating a little bit, and it was such a tiny sound. And I think what was amazing about that moment for me was that the quality of listening in the room, I think everybody was watching the brick and the brick was moving, and it was like it felt like no one was impatient for this brick to travel any faster. So very slowly it just travelled the length of the room, making this slight, it felt like a really ancient clock or something to me.
Good evening. Welcome to the second night of Audiograft. I've been asked to make a short safety announcement, which involves me telling you where the fire exits are. They are here and here. I hope you enjoy the concert.
Do we want to make it quite playful with quite short edits, moving between, and maybe have like the sequence of the concert, keep the order of the things we're playing, but maybe play a little bit with where we're hearing each bit from? The first piece was like the amazing keyboard carry on. You said you had the recorder inside a glass jar. Mm. That second piece, there was so watery and glassy sounds. Mm. Did that have a special effect there? Was that you were recording inside a glass jar? I mean,
it much more, because it picks out some of the kind of resonant frequencies, so they're kind of more of a delay around some of the frequencies and more of a resonance. So it kind of, it does, I mean, it'd be interesting to include something like that.
Amazing sound also in the concert where Stephen got the mallet and the big metal ring and hit it, and it totally excited the entire acoustics of this space.
Filled. Yes.
But that sound wave moved around the room. Yeah. It was amazing. Creaking the harp, I got some really nice feedback that someone said that when they listened, they were just in a maritime world. Yes. And they were like, I had the sea recording and the creakiness and the creaky floor. But then when I listen back through the hydrophone, it brings out those qualities even more, because you can hear the sounds underwater. So there's kind of there can definitely be a kind of maritime section play, and I think it's okay to play with the microphone perspective from the board from things.
Maybe I would love to take a bite of you playing harp. And maybe also the two guys.
Yeah. Mark and Sarah Saunders.
I really like a performance.
And I do like the
chicken
and the
pig
and the
donkey
and the
sheep
and the
horse
and the
hen
and the
duck
and the
cow
and the
owl.
And I do like the
crocodile
and the
elephant
and the
parrot
and the
giraffe
and the
hippo
and the
zebra
and the
snake
and the
lion.
And I do like the
marble
and the
egg timer
and the
butterfly
and the
candle
and the
bracelet
and the
balloon
and the
button
and the
bird
and the
delphinium
and the like the, and 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 I do like the frog, and the caterpillar, and the seed, and the cottonmill, and the passer,
and the pencil,
and the leaf,
and the lime,
and the pepper,
and the
grape, and the
apple, and the
tree, and the
woolly hat, and the
shell, and the
bean, and the
starfish, and the
carrot, and the
apricot jam,
and the crab,
and the button, and the
board,
and the
pate,
and the
soap,
and the
orange,
and the
goldfish,
and the
spade,
and the
bucket,
and the lily,
and I do like the banana.
So the piece starts with this text, spoken by a friend of mine who's from Glasgow, has a strong Glasgow accent. And I then divide the labour. I make a set of musical variations on this particular text to explore those ideas.
And those persons can make 48,000 pins a day.
Going through the recordings, I discovered one particular advert, and that was a game show. And the prize was a holiday in fabulous Paris, France. And it's just such a wonderful phrase, fabulous Paris, that I seized on that as the name for the piece, and you'll also hear that phrase being used as the music proceeds.
Yeah, but you should definitely
I think this is the thing to listen to if you really want to get into his work, because I, even for me, this was too extreme. I mean, I tried. I was like, okay, I should be intellectually at some level, I should get this, because you know, this is something I'm interested in. But I, after a while, I just didn't see this. See, it was like a novelty, I guess. After a while.
Well, that's the thing. It did feel like novelty.
Yeah.
I was saying that yeah, I could. Well,
I felt like it had like definitely.
It had great moments, but on the whole,
I thought it had like quite a flow.
Rather than allowing myself to kind of make this thing anything,
yeah,
I've kind of stuck with this series of pieces that I call my stasis pieces. I'm always using these recordings that don't really do anything on a macro level, but that have an internal complexity at a micro level.
Which you chanced upon in the case of the water, but you've identified
somehow.
Yeah,
and then I've deliberately gone out and found them afterwards, because I've done a number of...
At once re-recording new things and re-listening.
Yeah. So actually a lot of the material in here is recycled from installations. And it's just a platform or a vehicle or whatever to just explore a particular kind of sound. So I'm deliberately kind of eschewing all the other possible things I could do in a performance and concentrating on one thing. But just for this thing, I want to kind of stick to a particular sound world.
The set that we are doing today is some kind of large-scale deconstruction of something that was originally just about 3 minutes and very quick, dealing with different kinds of plateaus, little intersections, various different energies moving through a lot of different sounds, hopefully.
So what is this piece?
So
this is a piece where we have a series, the instruction is basically to work our way through a series of pieces. And we have to find a single event on each page of the score, and then find that event on the recording, and then single that event out and play it, and then stop, and then go to the next page and find the event on that page. I always think I'm going to find it quite a chore and quite difficult. It is quite difficult, but there's something also quite enjoyable about it. I don't know, just sort of having this, it's not like a normal performance, it's just, it's quite relaxed, and you're kind of just slowly working your way through, kind of page by page. So.
And what's it like from a listening point of view? How do you find it? What's the listening experience for you as a performer?
Goes in and out of being irritated sometimes, but I think that's me. If I can't find a bit and then I'm having to listen to the same bit of music over and over and over again because I can't find like the actual event that I've chosen, then I can start getting quite frustrated. But on the whole, I actually I really like it. I think I really like hearing these little bursts of classical music, these different pieces kind of coming in and overlapping, and there's a slight kind of war element sometimes as well, because if it's very loud coming from somewhere else, then you can't really hear your own sound, and then at other times you'll very much kind of feel like it's just you, and you know, everybody else has kind of dropped out, so it's very quiet, so then you feel much more kind of self-conscious. So I quite like that kind of variation in the listening.
You have been listening to Framework Afield. For more information, see our website at www.frameworkradio.net. Thanks for listening.